Hey, ladies and gentlemen, I am Luminous.
And I'm Rico.
And welcome to another episode of the Top Deck Time. This is episode 15, and we got a lot more spoilers coming your way. But before we get onto it, I do want to remind you guys, if you guys are not listening to the podcast from iTunes, we are available on iTunes, so feel free to subscribe to us there. But without further ado, let's welcome my co-host, Rico. How are you doing today? Are you feeling better from your sickness?
I am feeling better. I do, yeah. Recovering well.
So normally we do podcasts every weekend, and then we post it on Monday for your Monday trip to school or work or whatnot. But as you might have realized, we have a bunch of cards. In fact, we have about 32 cards since we did last submitted our podcast. So we felt that it was prudent to actually release a mid-week episode. I actually think that we are very, very nearing set two, because the rate that the cards are dropping, it's like hotcakes.
Oh yeah, we are spoiler flooded right now.
Spoiler flooded, that's a good problem to have. So let's not waste any time. Let's actually get into some of the cards that I find the most exciting. There are a cycle of five legendary cards that have an ultimate, and actually coincidentally an ultimate of 6, 7, 8, 9, or 10. So let's actually go in order. The first one is Korthon, the Far Watcher. It's a 2-power Huru, 1 Justice, 1 Primal, for a 2-3 with Endurance. Ultimate, pay 6 to give Korthon flying and play a 4-4 Owl with flying. And it's a legendary.
And it's an unseen.
It's an unseen.
For what that's worth.
The Huru Ninja Shaman people. I don't even know what unseens are, but...
And I'm very sad this is a podcast for now, because the artwork does look great as well.
It looks okay.
You think it's only okay? I think the artwork is pretty amazing on that one. Let's talk about the card. So I love that the card does like everything you would ever want out of a Huru 2 drop.
Yep.
In that the endurance works super good with the mentoring mechanic. So we might not know all the student mentor cards yet, but having an endurance student seems like a pretty good idea. The Huru 2 drops aren't that great, especially for more mid-rangey decks. So getting a nice addition there is pretty great as well. It's a good unit early against aggressive decks, and it's a good unit to have during the mid-game because of the ability to just get two flying buddies with 6 power, worth 6 strength, so that's a pretty good clock. And I just like everything about the card. Like, it's good early, it's good late, it's good against aggro, it's good against the grindier matchups because it gets you an additional buddy.
Before I kind of go on more talking about this entire cycle, this cycle kind of in my mind, I treat it as like the distant cousins of Seraph, because all of these cards are, you know, a decent sized body for the power that you're sinking into the card. And then obviously as the game goes long, the ultimates of these cards should allow you to get some incremental value. Now, I don't think this particular ultimate is as game-breaking as Seraph, but you're only paying 6 as opposed to 8. And this is only a 2-drop. So I agree with everything you say. The endurance, like we kind of talked about with the mentor student mechanic, is quite good. And I think in particular, if you're playing some sort of aggressive slash mid-rangey mentor slash student deck, 2-drop in particular is very, very important. Because some of the mentors start happening at 3 or 4. So having units is quite good. And also, I really like the fact that this is... It creates a separate unit with the owl, because having an extra body around is also important for further mentor mechanic. Because what ends up happening when you're playing mentor is you want to like have a guy... You want to attack with a couple of guys, but then have a couple of guys back to block slash to mentor. So just having more bodies, as opposed to, like, it could have very easily said, ultimate, pay 6.
Gains +4/+4.
And then flying, right?
And flying.
I think for the mentor mechanic specifically, this might be better. Although, I don't know, turning your 2-3 into a, I don't know, a 6-7 flyer seems pretty good too.
It does, but I like that it is stronger against removal and it's stronger against relic weapons, I think. Well, depending, like, sometimes a larger unit is better, but I generally prefer the second body, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think
like,
so.
Like, I really love that they created this card, because, like, I see myself dying to Oni Ronin in every other game. It's like, it's like a dream that I can play a grade 2 drop that blocks Oni Ronin and get some value in other matchups. I'm a little traumatized.
The Snow Crust Yeti, man. That's the new Oni Ronin.
Oh, yeah.
But anyways, the next cousins of Seraph is Vadius, Clan Father. It's a 3 power with 2 fire and 1 primal requirement for a 3-2 Gunslinger. Quick draw and Aegis. Ultimate, pay 7 to play a Steel Fang Chakram on Vadius. On the first half of the card, you're playing a 3 power for a 3-2 quick draw Aegis. I think that in itself is, you're happy to play that.
Yeah, that's and a good deal.
Obviously, the ultimate pay 7 to play a Steel Fang Chakram, that's just your power sync, essentially, when the game does go long. Pretty great aggressive card.
It is, and I love that it, again, it doesn't just get plus 4 attack, but instead you get something that will give you value even if he dies.
Yep. I think the fact that the card has Aegis in itself, because, you know, one of the best ways to deal with Steel Fang Chakram is to silence whatever the target's on, but it has Aegis, so it's getting a 2-for-1. So, I don't know, this card seems kind of powerful, like too powerful almost. The only fair way that you could deal with
very
it is
pushed.
Like relic weapons. But still, I mean, a 3-2 for 3.
Yeah, you're not winning against this in combat, you're not winning against this with removal spells, so it seems really, really pushed.
Yeah.
And again, the fact that it's so strong early and still does give you such a huge advantage late is a really huge deal.
So if I'm playing Skycrack aggressive, do you see the game going past 7 or 8 power, do you think? Because I feel like those are kind of, think of Vecano now, think of Stonescar now. Those are the 25 power decks.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. The thing is, I still think that he's a very, very, very good threat on its own against both units and controlling decks because of Quick Draw and Aegis. And so you will be happy just to have him as a 3-2 with those abilities anyways. And sometimes the games do go late, and then in a late game scenario, the Steel Fang Chakram is very, very strong in such a scenario. So I think when you don't need the ability, it's great. And when you can play it, it's probably in a game state where it's very good.
Yep. One thing I do want to mention that because this is an aggressive card, you need 2 fire and 1 primal influence to play it. And it's very unlikely to cast it on turn 3 every single time. So sometimes you're running this into a Sandstorm Titan or, you know, even 5 drops. So I think that is quote-unquote a balancing factor for this card. If you could cast this on turn 3 every time, I think this is definitely a little bit too powerful. But
but even if your opponent drops Sandstorm Titan, this guy attacking still allows you to just trade the torch.
Yeah, sure. It's scary for the Sandstorm player to block with. That's definitely true. All right, up next, we got the 4 drop. It's Diogo, I'm going to say this wrong, Malaga. It is at 3-5 for 4 power, 2 fire, and 1 time requirement. So this is a Praxis Legendary. It has charge, and its ultimate, pay 8 to give Diogo and all units in your deck double damage and charge. All units, double damage and charge. What?
Yeah, that sounds brutal. I'm not super high on that one. I have to say, just because the initial body you get isn't as strong as with the others. Like
that's
a 4 power 3-5 doesn't excite me as much. The ability obviously is super strong. However, I feel like if you play this card, you you want to hit a bunch of units, it's better on medium or small units, right? Because like if you draw a large unit late, you're in good shape anyways, I'd say. So if you want to play a bunch of medium or smaller units, you want to be aggressive, and then the 3-5 body just doesn't cut it, I think. So I don't like how the card plays with itself, if that makes sense. It's the exact opposite of the card before.
Does your evaluation change with Obelisk? As my dog is barking.
it might be okay in an Obelisk deck, I guess. I'm not, obviously the ability is super strong. There's no denying that. I just think that, like, for 4 power, you can just play a Sandstorm Titan and be happier generally. Or a Marisen's Disciple if you're playing Obelisk. Or an Obelisk. Like, it contends with a lot of 4 power cards that are just better, I think.
Alright, so sorry about the dog barking. There was somebody at the door. And now I have politely turned that person away. Actually, no, somebody needed a favor and I helped them quickly. But moving on, we get Ion the Abductor. It's a Xenon 3 drop for 1 time and 2 shadow influence for 3/3. It has lifesteal and ambush. That's already pretty decent. And it says ultimate, pay 9 to silence a unit in your void, then play it with +3/+3. I think everything on this card is what a Xenon deck wants. A little bit of lifesteal to trigger those life force mechanic. And Xenon decks generally try to go long. So the second half of paying 9 to ultimate, pretty feasible. And then you get a big thing out of your void is great.
Yeah, I think so too. Like, I like that, again, this eats an Onironin. So it helps you defend against the aggressive decks. And the Xenon decks, they only really had a Dawnwalker in the 3 slot if they are playing the Killers version. Mm. Or a Wasp if they were playing Control. So having additional tools there is nice. It's also nice that when you pass your turn with 3 open power, like, your opponent doesn't know if you have Wasp or Iron or maybe an ultimate price or maybe nothing. So it's nice to have more cards that have your opponent guessing
ultimate
what you're
price
up
to. Do you mean Annihilate?
Oh boy, yeah. I'm so sorry. I am so sorry. It's so hard for me though. Like, I really try to stop using MTG terminology. I've just been playing for 10 years, and I'm really sorry for all the new players and all the people who haven't played Magic, and I'm sorry to DWD, but like, it's so hard to get rid of this.
It's okay. I forgive you. It also could, you could leave up Secret Pages. That is, I think, a 3-drop that might gain some popularity, especially in some of the bigger, slower Xenon decks.
That's true. Yeah. So I don't think he's like, I don't think he's like super amazing and will define an archetype, but he's a fine role player.
I feel like that's true for all of these cards we discussed so far, right? Like, you're not really building a deck around it, but it's just good to slot in.
That's true. I think the Huru and the Skycrack one, they are just a little bit more focused.
Uh-huh.
Like, you can, as you said, you can play this deck in a mid-range deck or in a controlling deck or in a life force deck, and he will be fine in every one of them. But like, for example, the Skycrack one is just really great in aggressive decks.
Right.
The ultimate is very interesting in that you have to silence it, so you don't really want to bring back some utility unit, but giving it +3/+3 is pretty huge, so if you can ultimate it, you will generally have the largest unit on board. So
I think a lot of people would be like, oh, you silence your own guy, that's a negative, but a lot of percentage of time, the guy that's in your void, you're likely unable to play it back, unless you're playing some very focused Vara / Grasping and Shadow deck, then you wouldn't really play Ion. To me, this is just like able to draw an extra card.
Yeah.
Instead of from your deck, it's from the void. If you kind of value it as such, I think this is just a value engine. It's fine.
Yeah. No, totally. Like, I like the card. I'm just a little less excited about it than the first two.
Okay. Our final of the quote-unquote cycle of the cousins of Seraph, as I'm calling them right now, we got Bartholo, the Seducer. It's a 3-power 2/2 of the Argentport faction, so 2 Justice and 1 Shadow. Has Unblockable and Aegis on it already. Ultimate, pay 10 to draw a relic of your choice from your deck. So let me start by saying 3-power 2/2 Unblockable Aegis. All of these are excellent, especially in a faction where you could put some big weapons on this guy. Like, you could actually turn him into a very aggressive clock. Ultimate, pay 10 to draw a relic of your choice from your deck. That's a head scratcher for me. I'm not sure about that one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that this will be very relevant in the decks where you play Buffalo in your. You will just play him for his stats and unblockable Aegis. I don't think that the ultimate on this card is particularly relevant. And I have to say, I really don't like this card. Because it's just so uninteractive. Like, you can't interact with it through blocking, you can't interact with it with spells profitably, so like, I really don't like where this is, where this card is taking us, because like, between this and Silverwing Familiar, you have now 3 drops that are super hard to interact with and carry a weapon rather profitably, so I'm not a huge fan of those interactions.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is actually a very dangerous card to have in the game. Now, Devil's Advocate, if I may, there is a 3-power 2/2 unblockable unit already. It's a card that you don't play in Constructed. It's an okay draft card. I believe it's an uncommon. I don't actually know the name of it, but...
Lethrite Nightblade, I think.
Lethrite Nightblade. It's just of the Shadow Influence. So,
yeah,
that card is never played because it doesn't have the Aegis text on it. And now that it does, do you think this... kind of push it over and talk, also kind of balance it, you know, that is just a 3-power with 1 shadow influence. You now have to go justice shadow to play this card, so don't you think that also balance it a little bit?
Like this, that helps, obviously. Like it will be hard to play, or harder to play this on turn 3. But the Aegis is just such a huge deal in my opinion. Like, if you play a Lethra Nightblade, they can torch it, and it's dead. And if you play this, they can torch it, but they then just are down a torch, and you still have your Lethra Nightblade.
I think cards like these are somewhat self-correcting, as it were, because if we see more Aegis threats like Bartholo, or going back to the Huru one, the Korthon? Actually, no.
The Skycrack one.
The Skycrack one, Vadius. Then I think factions are going to just run more relic weapons as removal. Now, this sucks for factions that don't have relic weapon, but, you know, I think it's more and more dangerous world out there, and you just have to pack some relic weapon as part of your removal suite.
Yeah, for sure. Like, like this is very soft to every kind of relic weapon. Like, almost everything kills this, and that's somewhat reassuring, I guess.
Sure.
I just don't really like the design of the card, to be honest. Like,
me neither.
I would have liked either of those abilities to be something else so that you can interact with it, but
yeah. Well, hopefully we're not gonna see them turn 3 this guy into turn 4.
Into Hammer. Yeah.
Yeah. That is gonna be absolute brutal.
Or Lethrae Falchion, imagine.
Sure. Oh my god.
Try racing that.
Yeah. So I don't know. I really like the cycle overall. Perhaps not every individual card, but I found the cycle to be very exciting. And
yeah, me too. Like, I love it. Like, all of those cards are just very, very cool in that they give you something good early and something good late for the most part, except for maybe Buffalo. So I really like the design, and they are all pushed for sure.
Yeah, I actually like the cycle more so than the stuff we had in set 1, the Empty Throne, because Empty Throne to me didn't have as much focus when it comes to design. And now for each faction, you have some very early game play with a legendary, and or you can go super late. So I think it covers a wide spectrum of players and deck archetypes. So I really like that.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, moving on. Instead of talking about 2-drops and 3-drops, let's talk about a 12-power 10/10. Called Spirit of Resistance. Summon, kill everything else. Spirit of Resistance can't leave the void. So no cheating shenanigans with Grasping of Shadows. But importantly, kill everything else means relics, curses, units, everything. Not hands, because that would be crazy. Not decks, not void. Just the stuff that's on the board. Kill them, gone, be dead.
Yeah, it's again a card I don't really like, in that it just gives every faction a way to just have a hard reset button, and I guess that's okay because it's 12 and it's very expensive, but I think it's also kind of dangerous to have a card like this in the game, because there are some okay mana ramp strategies, and a factionless 10/10 is pretty hard to deal with.
Can I, again, devil's advocate here?
Yeah.
I mean, Alchemical Blast is also giving every faction that's something more towards fire, right? But alchemical balance is so like inefficient. And I kind of see spirit resistance exactly the same, right?
I agree. I don't think it's efficient now, but I think that like the card is either very bad or very good. And that's the exact opposite of the cards that I enjoy. Like I like cards that are sometimes good and define archetypes or whatever, but like this is either problematic for a metagame, because imagine a metagame where this card is good.
Mm.
Would you want to play in that metagame? A metagame where you have control decks that ramp up to 12 and then destroy everything you've done to that point? I think that's very unfun to play against. And then imagine a metagame where it's bad. Then why do we need this card?
Well, one thing is, that's for sure, it's a legendary that I won't be looking to craft four of, because I don't know why I want to be playing four of these. So, yeah. Moving on, this is a legendary I'm very excited about. It's called Watcher of the Big Ones. It's a 5-power 4/6 with double primal requirement. When Watcher of the Big Ones is a student, play a 5/5 Carnosaur. Carnosaurs, I believe, is just...
Deranged Dinomancer.
Oh, the blue, the 5/5 blue, mm-hmm. Primal Dinosaurs. So, I find this card, like, super strong, because one of the quote-unquote weaknesses of playing the student mentor mechanic is that when you do exhaust the student, you are vulnerable. You don't have a blocker, but you exhaust this 4/6, you get a 5/5. And even when you don't, like, another weakness of the mentor-student mechanic is you need the mentor slash students. But this guy is a 4/6. I mean, it ain't great, like 5 power for a 4/6, but it's also not terrible. I think this is quite good.
If they don't have a removal, it probably blocks whatever they played.
Yeah.
With its 6 toughness, it really really depends on what kind of student mentor cards we will be seeing. It's not particularly great with anything spoiled so far, if I recall correctly.
What about the I believe there's called Spirit Guide, the Justice 3/3 lifesteal guide that just the student has lifesteal when you mentor it.
Yeah, that's okay, I guess.
It's not, you won't open the deck builder and just slot in, you know, 4 Watchers and 4 Spirit Guide and be like, yep, that's the deck I'm going for. But I could see them kind of like pieces that you could gel together.
Yeah, like one problem I think is that you want to, like most of the cards that I can see this interacting with, like they will have to interact with not the units. Do you know what I mean? Like for example, giving this lifesteal is cool, and then you get a Carnosaur.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to then mentor it again to get an additional Carnosaur, you're not attacking with your lifesteal unit.
True. Okay.
Do you get what I mean? So like maybe if we get some student mentor cards that don't really give the bonus necessarily to the student.
Okay.
For example, we've seen the mount. The I mean that's bad, but yeah, it's bad. But like, but cards that have a similar effect in that they give the bonus to the mentor actually.
Sure.
Interact more favorably with Watch of the Big Ones, I think.
I mean, if you can mentor and give it Aegis, I'll be somewhat interested as well, because that kind of protects my engine, as it were. So.
True.
Yeah. I guess this is a card that we need to wait to see more from the rest of the set. Mm-hmm. Okay, another cycle card that I'm always very interested to see is the Champion cycle, which every faction has one of their own, and the Skycrack one just got revealed as Champion of Fury. It's a 2-power 2/2, obviously with Skycrack requirement, 1 fire and 1 primal. If you have double fire influence, it's +1 sword and charge. If you have 2 primal requirement, it's +1 sword and overwhelm. If you meet both requirements, it's a 2-power 4/2 with charge and overwhelm. And I guess the most important part, it's a Yeti warrior, actually.
Yes.
So Skycrack Yeti Tribal. Dude, I'm so excited to actually make that deck.
For sure. Like this and this card, between this and Vadius the Clown Father, we are seeing a very, very aggressive Skycrack deck incoming.
What'd you call him? The Clown Father?
Clan father.
You call him the clown father.
The clown father.
I mean, it'll be a clowning experience,
like,
I guess.
Like, I don't know. I think he wears some makeup. Not sure.
Does he? You mean Champion Fury?
Might be war paint, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
More look like war paint. Yeah. It's just a very aggressive unit. Even if you don't, if you turn on one half of it, I think it's already good enough. 2 power for a 3/2, whether it's charge or overwhelm. That's already good.
Yeah, I think you really want the charge. Like, if you are on the play and are able to play a one drop and play your second red, play this and attack with both for presumably five, mm-hmm. and your opponent didn't have a one drop, he's behind by a lot already. So I think the charge is more important. Which is a bit sad with the Cloud Snake Harrier we talked about in the last episode, because that needs double primal. But I can see a version playing Heavy on Fire and maybe also playing Groundbreaker.
No, I think the Overwhelm is actually important for activating Spark as well.
That's true. That's a very nice interaction.
We are in the Skycrack mechanic aspect, so you know, Champion Fury adds pretty nicely.
That's true.
Activating them Groundbreaker, I believe it's called. So
yeah. This is a really, really strong aggressive two drop. I'm glad that it trades for most other one and two drops, because it doesn't get an increase in health. But so I think it's a great drop for aggressive decks that still has enough counterplay, and that's something I like.
Yeah, they learn from the Champion of Chaos lesson. Like, giving aggressive unit also, you know, hearts when you meet requirements is just a little bit too strong. All right, moving on. We got a shadow spell called Extract. 3 power, mm-hmm. double shadow requirement, lifesteal. Deal 3 damage. Look at the top card of your deck. You may put it on the bottom. So this is what you call a scry in magic terms, where you look at the top and whether you like the card. If you like it, you keep it on top. If you don't, you move it to the bottom. So deal 3, you gain 3, and you get a scry. Is that a good rate, do you think?
I would have really loved this if this card was a fast spell. I think in that case it would have been very good for ranked. As is, I still like the card. The selection you get by looking at the top card and deciding if you want to keep it or not, it's roughly worth half a card.
Yep.
I mean, that's a weird way of saying it, but like in the late game scenario, when you can put a power card on the bottom of your deck, it really is like drawing, like gaining an extra draw set, because the power would have been worthless and you're one card deeper towards your good cards. And in the early game, if you need to hit power drops, this helps you as well. So this is a subtle but very strong mechanic.
Yep.
And having a removal that also gains you back some life is very good against the more aggressive decks. And I think that this will be, this might be a sideboard card for tournaments. Because it's only a spell, I am not sure it will turn up in main decks on ladder.
Yeah, one place it'll show up is definitely limited. It's a common.
Yes. Yeah, it's a common. And that's a very strong reason to be in shadow.
I think this might be one of the best common cards I've seen in Omens of the Past. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah, this is probably the common you want to be first picking if you're shadow.
Yeah. All right, moving on. We got Clever Stranger. Of course, there is a family of strangers. This one is from the Praxis clan. 4 power, Praxis requirement for a 2/2 warp. The strangers have warp. Very self-explanatory. And I believe this is actually the first card that's made me like really excited to actually build Stranger, because one of the problems that Stranger's decks always had, you have no problem vomiting out 2/2s, you have problem refilling your hand. The only other way to refill was the Fortunate Stranger, the primal time one, but that costs 6. But this one, a little bit better, a little bit cheaper.
Yeah, this is very strong, because like if you can construct your deck in a way that you have a lot of strangers, this can churn through your deck very quickly. And especially, and now let's get janky here, okay? I got another card for you.
Yeah.
It's called Workshop Forge, and it's 5 power, 1 fire, 1 time. It has warp. And it reads, warp cards on top of your deck cost 2 less, and it's a relic.
Yeah.
Now imagine if you have both of those. You can play all your fixing strangers for free.
Okay.
Like you can churn through your deck very, very quickly.
Sure.
That's pretty cool, right? I'm not saying this is strong, but it's very cool.
I mean, I'm looking forward to playing with Workshop Forge. I don't know if I'm going to play Workshop Forge in the same deck as... I think you play those like power fixing stranger in the stranger deck because they have the text stranger on it, more so for the power fixing aspect. I think as we get more and more strangers.
But I mean, if you can give like half of your deck warp and reduce the cost by 2, you can still, like, even if you're not playing the colorless strangers, but Like, you can play all, like, the plus one to a lot of strangers for only one power, and then
sure,
go again and go again. And, like, you can go through a lot of cards that way each turn. So the ability to give you a lot of cards limited somewhat by your power, plus the ability to gain a lot of power during a turn, is a strong one.
So let's actually switch gear and talk about Workshop Forge. Is this the next hot thing?
It kind of reminds me of Crown of Possibilities in that it does nothing for a whole long time, and then eventually it might be pretty cool. I don't think that it's necessarily good and constructed, but it's definitely a card I want to build a deck with. That's for sure.
I really think this is actually just missing another piece, right? So you brought up the Clever Stranger in a sense that, you know, it works in the Stranger deck. What if there's a card type that says, like, I don't know, spells have warp in your deck, or units have warp in your deck?
Then it becomes very, very, very strong, obviously. Like,
you're taking turn five off.
Costing two less, that's a huge cost reduction.
Yeah.
Because you don't only get it once per turn, potentially. Like, you can potentially get this multiple times a turn if you have more than one warp card on top of your deck.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'll reserve judgment for this card. Like, I need to see every single warp card from this set before I'd be like, okay, this card is good or this card is not good.
This card definitely has a lot of potential. Like, everything, like, when you're in a game that is kind of balanced by resources and there's a card that lets you just totally cheat on resources, that is a potentially broken card.
Yeah.
But it really depends on the amount of warp cards we get. That's very true.
All right. Moving back up, we got Valkyrie Spire Guard. This is a 4-power 3/3 flyer, double justice requirement. It's a Valkyrie, and it reads +3/+3 while you have another Valkyrie. So the dream curve of Valkyrie Enforcer on 3 into a 4-power 6/6 flyer. Bruh.
I think this is a little bit easier to get turned on than the Champion of Wisdom.
Okay.
Which is a 4-power 6/6 flyer in the best case scenario as well.
Yeah.
But it's also easier to turn off again. Like, you can't do anything once your opponent has a 4 primal and 4 time influence, but you can easily interact with your opponent's other Valkyries. For example, you curve your Valkyrie Enforcer into this, and I torch your Valkyrie Enforcer.
And then you could torch this after you torch the Valkyrie Enforcer.
Yeah, or I just leave it on the field because it's a 4-power 3/3.
Yeah.
That's not super strong.
The other problem with this card is that in set one, there are two good Valkyries. You get Valkyrie Enforcer, as I mentioned, and Ikaria. Then you're looking at things like Loyal Watchwings or Silverwing Avenger or I don't know.
Makto is a Valkyrie.
Okay. Okay, I mean, set two cards are coming. You're right, but I think we're going to need to see at least, like, 2 to 3, like, especially you need Valkyries, like, before this. Like, Makto, after this, it could be torched by then, you know? It's somewhat dangerous.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm not hot about this one.
Okay. Moving on. We got a janky card. It's an 8-power shadow spell with double shadow requirement called Sleepless Night. It's a night that you don't sleep. It's called Revenge. Discard your hand and draw 4 cards. I don't know where I want to put this. I don't even know if I want to put this in my deck at all. But
yeah, that's a little tougher to evaluate.
Yeah.
Let's get the easy part out of the way first. If you are playing Primal, you will always want to play Channel the Tempest over this. So this is for slower control.
It depends. Yeah. Channel the Tempest costs 4 primal. If you're playing like triple faction, that's hard to hit. So maybe this is a good substitute if you're playing.
Yeah, that's true. Like it's okay. So if you can cast Channel, it's way better.
Okay,
let's,
I agree.
Let's just put it that. So this is clearly for decks that either don't have access to primal or don't have access to enough primal.
Yeah.
Sorry for that.
No problem.
And still want to go over the top in the late game. And then it's interesting, I think. The problem is you can't really play this on 8 if you're digging for stuff, if you haven't emptied your hand. Like, if you're playing a controlling deck, and you're looking for, like, a Harsh Rule, and you have a card full of a handful of 5 cards, you don't want to be casting this to dig for your Harsh Rule. So that's a problem, I think.
Is this a powerful effect?
I think it is a powerful effect because you can also fill your void with cards if you want to do that.
Okay.
So maybe it's beneficial actually for you to dump some cards. I am not sure. Like, 8 power is a lot and you're not affecting the board, which obviously is a problem with an 8 drop. but, like, I can see myself running one, not more than one, though.
Maybe.
Like, you don't want to be chaining them, I guess.
I'm just ready for that aha moment in the future when there is a deck that wants Sleepless Knight.
Yeah. I might be very wrong about that. Like, drawing 4 cards is a super powerful ability, and this potentially draws 8.
Yeah.
And that's very, 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 very strong. I'm just skeptical about the high cost and the drawback of not affecting the board and not being able to cast it all the time when you might have cards in your hand that you still need.
Okay, so speaking of a card that is interested to have your void filled up, we got a 4-power 4/5 called Togolv Ice Cap Trader. It's with double primal requirement. When Torgolf hits the enemy player, draw a card, then discard a card. +3/+3 while you have 15 or more cards in your void. 4-power, possibly 7/8.
Possibly. So what do you think of this?
I think this is a very, very good card if you want to be playing a very spell-heavy deck. Because generally those are the decks that could actually fill the second half of requirement. If I'm just playing this as a casual 4/5, I would not be playing this card. I think this card is only a consideration if you could actually turn on the second half of the card reasonably often. And of course, it kind of helps itself out by getting in and hitting and turning on, but I'm not sure how often that is possible. Like, you kind of have to work a little bit to actually get this 4-power 7/8.
Yeah, for sure. You have to work for this second ability to be turned on. Mm-hmm. I think the ability is pretty nice, though. I like that it not only helps itself, but it also helps you survive until then. Because, like, looting or drawing a card and then discarding a card, it's similar to the card we discussed before. Like, it gives you the option to filter through your deck and in the late game get rid of some of your power in favor of more spells.
Right.
And I think that's a generally very powerful ability. And I like that they're printing more cards like these to help us smooth out our draws a little bit, or mana sinks as we saw in the first cycle.
Yeah.
I think this all of those are a lot of those cards are leading up towards smoother games, which I really enjoy. And I actually like the card quite a bit. Like, 4/5 is an interesting body. Obviously, it's hard to hit through. Like, you can't count on this connecting every game, but you can do a little bit of work and help him out, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, the other big 4 drops that you gotta watch out for is Sandstorm Titan and Groundbreaker, both of which is just bigger than this. But at the same time, I believe this card has more utility. Like, if you just get a hit with this card, you just kind of feel very good. Also,
yes.
I feel like this is a pretty good student to have, especially if you could somehow give it flying or some sort of evasion. Suddenly, mm-hmm. then, you know, you're gaming, because eventually it's going to be a 7/8.
I was thinking about maybe playing this in the Felon Shell, because Shadow gives you access to removal, so you can more reliably get it through. But then again, against control deck, you don't want the removal, so you can then discard it and draw new cards.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So I can see that.
All right. Speaking about cards from your void, this is a very interesting one. It's a 2-power time spell with 1-time requirement called Forgotten Find. Play 2-power cards from your void depleted. Huh.
Yeah, that's a bit of a head scratcher.
So, okay. So let's evaluate this a bit, right? Like, obviously, if you could actually just play this card and it gets you 2-power cards from your void every single time, it's busted. It's broken. But as it were currently,
absolutely.
In the game of Eternal, in order to get those 2-power cards into your void, you have to do some work for it.
Yeah.
So then the amount of work you're doing versus the payoff of playing Forgotten Find, is it better than, let's say, Find a Way? Is it better than Secret Pages? I don't know.
Yeah, that's very hard to evaluate, because the it ramps you for 2, which is very strong, but it ramps you for 2 at a point in time where you probably already have 4 to 5 power. A way to do this is, for example, Herald Song, where you draw and discard 2 power, but then it's turn 4 where you play the Forgotten Find, right?
Sure.
Or maybe with a Whispering Wind.
Yeah, Whispering Wind in this is quite good.
Yeah, for sure. Because it lets you discard the power to get more expensive spells that you then can cast because you can replay that power from your void.
So I wonder if this card lets you play 1 power from your void. Like, let's say if you just have 1.
I would think so, but I don't know.
We're not sure, right? Because it could say play up to 2 power cards from your void depleted. It doesn't
but
say
we
that.
Can check the wording of Smuggler's Stash.
Ah, I think Smuggler's Stash just says fine.
Draw 2 units and 2 weapons.
Okay.
Fair enough. Yeah. And Smuggler's Stash allows you to draw only 1, so I would assume that this would allow you to play only 1 as well.
All right.
I'm not sure. Like, I don't think that currently we have enough to abuse it, but it's potentially a very powerful effect.
Moving on, we got some relic/relic weapon/weapons. So let's actually talk about some of these attachments. We got Hate Cleaver. It's a 4-power, 3/2 relic weapon. So that is the weapon that you put on your face. This is a shadow card with double shadow requirement. It reads Life Force. When you gain health, Hate Cleaver gets +1/+1. Very interesting. Yeah, Hate Cleaver, right now, as it were, it's a very, like, it's like underpower Sword of Ikaria. You're paying an extra power for the same stats as Sword of Ikaria, but has the possibility of getting very, very big, especially if you have some ways to, like, get very small but incremental health.
Cough, Stronghold Visage. Yeah, I think just Stronghold Visage, right? Like, it gets +1/+2 every turn then.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the armor aspect of Stronghold Visage. Okay, now we're talking.
If you want to play Hate Cleaver, you absolutely need a way to abuse it. Just playing this on 4 without any previous armor or any way to gain life immediately just won't make you happy, because it will trade against every unit or almost any unit that you want to be attacking with it, and it can't kill a lot of the units your opponent will have played by turn 4. So you absolutely need a way to abuse this ability. And I am not sure how you're going to do this, because if you want to have a lot of those ways to interact with Life Force, and then the question becomes, like, how many Hate Cleavers do you want to play?
Yeah.
And when do you want to play it? Like, it's really hard to play this by turn 4 and immediately trigger the Life Force.
Unless you don't, as I said,
it's really not good. But that's like turn 5 play. That's a turn 5 play.
Ah, true.
Yeah, that's the problem, right? You need to have a lifesteal unit.
Even though it's not like the most efficient rate when it comes to relic weapon, I think having more relic weapons in general is good. Just there are more and more Aegis threats running around, right? And
yeah.
Hay Cleaver plus other relic weapons are some of the most efficient ways to deal with it. So.
Also, relic weapons keep control decks honest. Like, they force control decks to play more units.
Or more ways to kill.
Or, yeah. Or more ways to interact with it. Yeah.
Which they are getting the tools. So I think we're going to see a rise of the control decks. Moving on, we got a very interesting relic. It's a 2-power relic, primal, 1-primal requirement. Maelstrom Bell. Once per turn, you may pay 2 to increase the damage of the top damaging spell of your deck by 1. This sounds like hot garbage.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm just totally off.
No, I agree. Like, what kind of deck would you want this in? Like, you're playing damaging spells in a, probably more in an aggressive than a controlling deck, right? Like, you would have to put in so much for this to be worth it, and I don't think it ever is. Like, you're putting in an extra card already, and then you would have to put in 2 power a turn for a very marginal bonus that you might not get because there are not enough damaging spells in your deck, or you just don't draw them or whatever. Like, yeah. I'm really not a fan of this card. But I mean, like, imagine you play this and then you activate it on turn 3, then you activate it on turn 4, and then you play an Obliterate for 8 damage. Was it worth it? You put in 6 extra power and an extra card.
No, it's
for
not.
For 2 extra damage. Like, that's a horrible rate.
Yeah. So. Alright, so another relic that I think is going to be much more powerful is a Justice relic called Shard of the Spire. 4 power, 1 Justice requirement. When you play a unit, its sword slash health becomes the higher of the two. So think of a Dawnwalker. It's a 4-4 now. A Lumen Defender.
Auric Minotaur.
Auric Minotaur is a 5-5. Oh, God. Okay. Mm-hmm. Or what is that, a 0-6 Flash Flyer?
Dune Phantom.
6-6 Flyer yeah. for 3?
That's pretty good.
So... this is definitely screams build around me, right? So the question then becomes, can your deck function if you don't draw this card? Because obviously, you're going to put cards that works well with this deck, with this card.
Yeah, and that's the problem. The problem is that you have to drop this first, too. So when you play your Auric Minotaur or your Doom Phantom in 3, and then you play this, you didn't do anything. I'm very skeptical.
Yep.
Doesn't this scream Gauntlet and Gauntlet boss to you?
Oh, maybe. Yeah. No, for
don't
sure.
Don't you think so?
Yeah, for sure. There is going to be a Gauntlet right? boss that they just
so
have this effect.
And they are going to Dune Phantom the fuck out of you.
Yeah. I'm not going to even bleep that out because that's just true. All right. There are going to be a couple of interesting weapons I want to talk about. So weapons, keep in mind, are the stuff that you put on your units. This is a 1-power fire weapon. It gives +1/+0 called Hidden Shiv. Has warp. So now we're talking. I think the strongest warp cards or the most interesting warp cards are the ones that are cost very cheap, because those are the ones that you are likely to be able to warp and fit it into a turn, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I really like the card. I also like that the design, like a Shiv is very easy to draw, right? So
okay,
I like
okay,
a Shiv having the warp. Like I like the design there.
You like that... That they didn't call it Hidden Hammer or something, or Hidden Double Cleaver Sword. Or...
Hidden Sledge Hammer. Yeah.
Okay, so what kind of decks do you think will be interested in something like this?
I can see this in an aggressive Skycrack deck. Like, putting this on a flying unit or a unit with Overwhelm seems like a pretty good idea. Like, putting this on a Groundbreaker seems like a pretty good idea.
Anything on a Groundbreaker is a good idea.
Yeah, generally a deck where you have a low curve and a lot of units. Mm. I can see this in, like, I don't necessarily think that this will end up in every fire aggressive deck, but I can see this card having its place.
I could see this in just mono fire decks, straight up. Because those decks have trouble, like, kind of churning through the deck. Like, the velocity of card draw is quite low. Warp cards help. And, yeah, it sucks if you draw this in your hand, because it's actually just worse than a fiery axe. But, again, it's so easy to warp that you're going to be likely to be able to warp it off the top should you have some units on the board.
So I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like the card.
Another very interesting weapon to talk about is called the Peacekeeper's Prod. Justice weapon, 4 power for a triple justice requirement for a +3/+2. Summon, stun an enemy unit.
Yeah, and that card is interesting, I think. The triple justice makes me skeptical. Because this is competing with Auric Runehammer, and Auric Runehammer is a beast. But the ability to stun a unit is interesting.
Auric Runehammer is...
Not Auric Runehammer. Not Auric Runehammer. The
Hammer of Might.
What's it
Hammer
called?
Of something.
Hammer of Might. Sorry.
Is it Hammer of Might?
Hammer
I'm
of
not
Might.
Sure. Yeah. The 4-power 3-3.
Yeah. I brain farted the Hammer of Might, obviously.
Yeah.
So it's competing with that, and that's a stiff competition. But the ability to stun an enemy unit is very strong in a racing situation. And this is a weapon that allows more of your units to attack as opposed to only one.
Yeah.
Like when you drop the hammer, you can attack with the unit wielding the said hammer, but probably not with your other units, depending obviously. Like in a matchup where you would want the Peacekeeper's Prod, is what I'm saying. Like in a mid-rangey or aggressive matchup where both players have units on board. And this allows your other units to attack as well. So that's a pretty cool thing. I think that's it's more of a sideboard card to me again. Or a metagame dependent one, obviously. And I'm not super hot about it, but I can see this having its place. Like the ability to get multiple of your guys through and not take anything on the swing back. Like this removes a blocker for 2 turns, right?
Right. I don't know. I just see this car super situational. Like the triple yeah. justice requirement makes it such that I think only the mono justice decks are interested. And even at that, I think it's still having some stiff competition with Hammer and Might. Mm. And also, it does nothing against unitless decks. Like decks just that don't have a unit out. Then you're just playing a 4-power 3/2.
That's true.
It's just not. And,
by that point, you're also competing with Mantle of Justice, which at 3 Justice already gives you +3/+3 as well.
Mantle of Justice. I don't know. I think this is just perhaps one influence too stiff to be played. Like if it's like 4-power, 2 Justice requirement, I think there's some discussion because it is very interesting of getting an immediate effect with the Peacekeeper's Prod versus Hammer of Might. That gives you a long, long game impact. Here, I just don't think this card is that playable.
Yeah, I think it would have been very, very interesting at still 3 justice influence, but only 3-power and +2/+2.
Okay, yeah, sure.
But yeah, as is, I think the cards we already have are probably preferable.
Yeah. All right, another quite interesting card to talk about is Colt Aspirant. It's a 1-power 1/1 with 1-time influence. It reads Overwhelm and Life Force. When you gain health, Colt Aspirant gets +1/+1. I think this is constructed playable. I just don't know what deck it goes into.
Yeah, it needs a lot of help. But you generally would want this to grow into a 3/3/2/4/4.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're putting work in and you're not getting it immediately and it's a very bad top deck. So you would want to have that offset by the fact that it's very strong if you have it early. I don't know. Like I like that the Xenon decks already like to play Virus Favor and Temple Scribe. So that's a pretty good both of those are a very good follow-up to turn one Cult Aspirant. I don't like drawing this card late at all.
Yep.
So that's a problem. And I am currently not sure if we will get enough stuff to be able to build an aggressive Life Force deck, which I think would be very interesting and obviously would be the best home for this card.
Yeah, I think they have to be very careful in balancing aggressive Life Force decks, because it's a deck that you just can't race, right? You're gaining health, and then they're beating you down. It's just...
Yeah, but it's also a deck that is very, very soft to removal or more controlling decks, because it's a deck that needs enablers and cards that profit, and once you like torch one of those, the other is doing nothing as well. So I think it's okay. Like it's very strong in aggressive matchups, but it lacks in mid-rangey or controlling matchups. So I think it's all right.
Another card that we have to see the rest of the set to evaluate. Mm. All right, the final card that I'm interested to talk about is called Alluring Ember. It's a 1-power 1/1 with flying, charge, and warp, but it does have 2 fire and 2 time requirement. So again, warp cards are at their strongest when you could cast it essentially for free off the top of your library. Mm-hmm. It's only 1-power once you meet the requirement. But are decks like which decks are the decks that are interested in a 1/1 flying charge? I guess the Obelisk decks.
Yeah, Praxis Obelisk.
Yeah. Would you put this in Praxis Obelisk?
I honestly might, because I think it's alright to play it early. It's alright if you have Obelisk, and obviously playing it for free off the top of your deck, or not for free, but for 1-power only off the top of your deck, when you have an Obelisk already out, is a very strong play. So I would like to test it. I would like to see if it is good enough, but I can imagine it is. Like, I think the card isn't embarrassing if you have to hard cast it. The problem, obviously, being the double fire and double time influence requirement, so you can't really cast it in the first few turns, even if you could potentially warp it. You probably can't because of influence requirements.
I just have that nightmare scenario. You just, like, you hit the redraw button and you see 4 of these. Just like,
yeah.
Kill me.
What have I done?
Yeah, what have I done? All right, so that is going to be not all of the cards, but these are the cards that we find very interesting. Is there anything that I left out, Rico, that you want to talk a little bit about?
I think we hit all the ones that caught my eye as well.
Okay.
Let me go through it real quick again.
I know.
Yeah, I think.
I jumped a lot.
Like, obviously, there are some other cards we we didn't want to make this a super long episode because it's a middle of the week one. So we kind of brought you a selection of cards that we found noteworthy, and we hope you didn't miss any of those we didn't talk about.
Yeah. All right. So we'll dedicate the last couple of minutes to some tinfoil theories as to when set two is coming out. When is your guess? If there is a guess.
My guess is this Friday or next.
This Friday or next. Yeah, that's the exact same guess I have as well. I hope this Friday. So we could actually start talking about some decks. Based on the cards that we've seen, is there any one archetype or card that you want to build around?
Skycrag aggro.
Skycrag aggro.
That's the first thing I'll
that
build.
Is, that, okay, we'll work on it together. Snowcrest Yeti. Wump. Is Wump making a triumphant return, do you think?
That really depends on the other cards, but I doubt it, because like the deck I have in mind currently is very heavy on fire and light on primal.
Okay, so Groundbreakers, a couple of Adias in there,
yeah.
Champion of Fury.
Yeah, all those cards seem super exciting.
But how are you going to play your primal one drop?
Yeah, I think I won't. I won't be. I will be playing my only Ronin.
Okay.
And also I want to obviously build a deck with... the Lumen Shepherd,
I
think is his name. Yeah, I have to, man. Like, I'm so excited for this card.
I think Waystone Infuser, the one that gives you power.
Waystone Infuser?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, for sure.
But anyways, the intro and concluding music is Monody by the Fat Rat. Thank him for allowing us to use the music. And that's going to do it. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode of the Top Deck Time, and we will see you next week. Bye, guys.